Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host today. This is another in our ongoing series, the Sunday Afternoon Murder Club. A chance to reflect on crimes old and new. Some are well known, and some have been forgotten. The closest that he got to publication was bottom of page 14 of your local newspaper. Before we get started, I do want to apologize to our listeners. We've been having some horrible technical problems with our servers today. The tech geeks are working as fast as they can to resolve the issue, and as soon as we have firm estimate on getting Blogger News back in some sort of stable condition, I'll let everyone know on our sister site, narwo.com. narwo.com. Anyway, joining me in the studio is my wife, Jan. Hi, Jan.
Hi, Simon. Hello, everyone.
From the City of Angels, we're joined by well-known attorney Manny Barling. Manny, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Hi, Jan. I didn't know you were there.
Oh, yeah, I'm here.
by the way, Manny, I have to compliment you. Nice tomatoes.
Usually you say that to a good-looking woman. Thank you. For our viewers on my Facebook page, I publish photos of my latest 2 days picking of tomatoes, and 19 pounds on Saturday or Friday, and 18 pounds today, and they're huge yellows. Well, one of the photos shows it's the size of a can. That's really quite
wow.
Good. I was surprised.
Oh.
We're moving in, that's all I can say. From up in New York State, we're joined by Denny Griffin. Denny, welcome.
Good afternoon, and I just got a terrible hankering for a tomato sandwich.
Oh, Denny, we got some tomatoes for you.
Boy, my mouth's watering thinking about it.
And by the way, Denny, I see that you and Andrew are about to launch a new venture. Do you want to give us the thumbnail sketch?
Yes, it's going to be called Block Talk Radio. It's going to be called Mob Talk. And Andrew DiDonato, the former Gambino family associate, and I are going to be co-hosts. We're going to kick the show off in probably late September. We don't have a definite date yet, but we're going to have a lot of, for anybody that's mob, interested in mob history and so forth, we're going to have a lot of excellent guests and talk about some of the mob capers that went unreported or underreported, and going to have some law enforcement folks on. We're even going to have some of the former gangster, mobster, criminal types give out safety tips and how to protect yourself and your assets from the thieves of today. So we're looking forward to getting started.
Oh, Lord.
Sounds interesting.
I can't wait. So, Denny, do I have to worry about a mob hitman if I listen too much?
Absolutely not. Absolutely
okay.
Not, Manny.
I just want to make certain.
Cobra might be a different story, but you know.
Listen, just hanging around with Cobra can be dangerous, right?
Actually, my favorite Denny story was I was out walking one day, and the mail lady spotted me, and she said, "Are you going to be home in about 10 minutes?" And I said, "Oh, probably not." She said, "Well, I've got a package for you, and it has to be signed for." And I said, "Okay." And she said, "I can give it to you right now." So I said, "Fine." I looked at it, and I read where it came from, and I signed, and I said, "It's okay, it's just from one of my mob friends."
Uh, And that brought what kind of response, Simon?
She got really cool. Just, you know, went along her merry way. also joining us today is our very good friend, Dave Neckel. Dave, how is Orlando treating you?
Oh, it's treating me okay. It's a typical Florida summer. So, but it's not as bad as it is in other parts of the country, which is kind of like not what you generally expect. But Florida never gets those nasty, nasty heat waves like some parts of the rest of the country get. But other than that, nothing to complain about.
Really?
We are expecting to be joined by orchid grower and general troublemaker, bail bondsman William Cobra Storbs, but he's being fashionably late. As always, our chat room is open, and we do invite listeners to ask their questions of us. We also ask that you be respectful of each other. Okay, I didn't want to do it, but I guess we have to start with the Casey Anthony trial. This is a story that's taken on a life of its own. Dave, hasn't Orlando had quite enough of Casey Anthony?
Definitely enough. I haven't written since the end of the trial, I think, or since I haven't written anything really for my own blog since the end of the trial, and I'm trying to really like wash my brain out with soap, you know, to clear my head of Casey and her ilk. But you know, you still hear about it in the news, but not like it was. It's not like an everyday in your face story. So that's nice. And finally, the world is starting to move away from it, including Orlando.
All you get nowadays is about all the deals that she's getting or the deals that she's not getting or how this one's getting a deal and how that one's getting a deal. That's all that everybody's worried about right now is the money that's going to be made off of all this or not made.
Well, I think a lot of that, Chan, is just looking for a story that, they're looking for a story, frankly, in all the wrong places as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
That's why I said the deals, it's going to be made or not going to be made, whatever
well,
they want.
I heard
it
something about being hold up with some kind of attorney out in California. Is that, I think his name was Lanny or Sammy or Manny or something like that?
Well, and Manny would be okay. I mean, maybe, hey, if I could make some money off her, that wouldn't be so bad. Somebody's going to.
Okay. There's been a story bouncing around for days, actually, ever since she was released. And that is this $1 million offer for the exclusive interview. I believe it's Al something or other.
Taylor or something.
Taylor.
Yeah. Yeah, who used to work for Jerry Springer. I mean, you know, there's a splendid offer. But here's the big question. And Manny, I think you might be the best one to answer it. This Al guy is probably just talking a load of bullshit. However, he did say one thing that was very, very true. Her worth is dropping fast. She might well be worth $1 million right now, but how much will she be worth in a month or 2 months? I mean, I doubt in 2 months she'd even get enough to buy a new Sunfire.
Well, you know, my positions are totally unchanged in this case. She has to pass a lie detector test. And if you read any of the articles about this, that was
right.
One of the things that was brought up is the lie detector test. So I don't think that she can sign on for any interview that requires her to take one. And that's her biggest problem right now.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, I understand all the three networks basically are trying to get grab her. And that's one of the reasons why RJ Baez has been in New York.
Well,
what are they going to do?
I did read this morning that, I forget where I read it at, but I did read where the networks aren't offering her any money, though. Because
yeah,
they got so much flack from it before.
They won't give her any money, but they'll pay her $20 million for clipped toenails. That's the way they do it.
I know that's the way they do it, but they claim that they're not doing it now, though, because they had gotten so much publicity. I mean, bad publicity for doing it before, that they just want her story. They want her interview right now, but they're not offering her the money. Now, this guy from Jerry Springer, his, whatever his name is, I don't forgot his name.
Shamley or something like that? I don't know.
No, the producer. Taylor. I think Al Taylor or something. What is his name, Simon?
Al Taylor.
He claims that he did it, but I don't think he did. I really don't think he signed on, because he claims that it's a done deal with him, but I don't believe he did.
And both Baez has denied any such meeting.
Right.
And why Palm Springs? Let me, Palm Springs has a population of 50,000, of which about, I would say a third of it are industry-related people, and the television coverage there is almost an adjunct to Los Angeles TV, because so many people who own homes there are basically Los Angeles residents. So if she were truly in Palm Springs, she would not be able to hide it from the press because, that's where they go on weekends too. So the fact that no one's reported seeing her there makes me believe that she's not there.
Yeah.
I wonder if she's anywhere
where anyone can see her. She's got to be somewhere.
Well, yeah, but Palm Springs is not a place where you can go and not be seen. It's a highly public place that's an adjunct to the movie industry. So she's in Palm Springs. We would all know that.
Right. I want to come back to that. Denny, I want to bring you in, though. Are you in agreement that the longer she waits, the less value there is in the product?
I would certainly say so, and I don't see how it can increase at this point. I think it's the only way for it to go is down. You get in this country with different stories breaking every day. You can get into different cases and trials and investigations for people who are interested in that kind of thing. And, 6 months from now, you'll have, guess what? Casey Anthony's going to be on 2020 or whatever, and somebody will say, well, who the hell is she? So, I mean, our memories fade, and I can't see her value going up any. I can only see it going down.
I think anyone that is saying basically F her is still saying it or going to say that months from now. And I think the networks are concerned that instead of it being a good PR move, that it could be a really detrimental one. And I think that, and especially if they pay her a large amount of money, I think the more money paid for that interview is the more the network is in danger.
Let me ask you a question. Let's toss this one out. Suppose that Fuhrer dies down in 6 months. 7 months from now, she resurfaces and says, I'm willing to take a lie detector test. All of a sudden, do you think that public interest would jump right back in, that she'd
be
very important again, a commodity?
Well, no, the operative word there was very important. Yes, I think that she could sell it, but now we're talking about an interview that could be worth, $25,000? Certainly not a lot of money. I mean, you get more money of a photograph of Lindsay Lohan stumbling out of rehab than you're ever going to get for her. it's sad, but it's true, Danny. I can hear you chuckling, but she's a more valuable commodity, screwed up than she is in good shape.
Yes. Actually, I think that in 6 months, she'd be hard pressed to get a gig on late night TV selling ShamWows or representing clap-on, clap-off.
I've fallen and I can't get up. I like that one better.
Is clap-on, clap-off something to do with venereal disease? Am I missing something? I'm just checking. Inquiring minds want to know this.
And I do believe that we've just been joined by the late William Cobra Storbs. Good afternoon, Cobra.
I apologize, Simon. I was they don't allow you to have a phone inside the jail in the Sally Port, and I got into a little bit of a discussion too long, and I said, listen, I got to be out of here at 4 o'clock. Take this guy. So I ended up having to fill out all the damn paperwork. Anytime you're in a hurry, so I apologize. I let my partner go ahead and take care of the rest. Jail is not a nice place. I don't give a shit if you're just visiting, dropping somebody off, or if you happen to be in there.
Well, Cobra, I want you to know we were taking up a collection for a watch for you, but that's okay. We don't have to do it now.
Well, I got enough watches. The only thing is I ain't got no time. So if you get one imported with some time, but I tuned in there for a few minutes and was standing by listening, holding my breath, and it sounds like you guys have already popped a bottle of the Triple X and having a good go around there. Give me a snort, whatever y'all got there, man.
Well, come on down.
Here's the thing, Cobra. There's lots of scuttlebutt out there about Casey giving a $1 million interview, but the longer she waits, the less she's worth.
True.
Are you in agreement?
Absolutely. And the offers right now, they're in a scuttlebutt my ass. They're in a bidding war. There has been one crazy number floating out there of times $5 million. I said, holy shit, I will go get her, drag her ass in here, and we will do this if you'll split with me. But right now there's probably a better deal for real offer on the table. It's somewhere between $1.5 million and $2 million. But here's the dealio. If it doesn't go down soon, all of a sudden, well, I heard somebody else say 6 weeks from now it won't be worth but $100,000 at that. And that's what happens. You have to strike while the iron's hot, so to speak. But the annuity wears off of it. There'll be another case that break off, and next thing you know, everybody's, oh, shit, Casey, who the fuck? Who wants to hear about that shit anymore? And move on to something else. It's kind of in case in point. Haley, who ever talks about the little girl anymore except for sly-ass little shows out there that, ride on the back of other folks? Nobody. Nobody.
I do.
They just fade in the past. I know you do, Jan. I know you do, and you're joined by a few that, we call them the slime radio shows that ride off the back of others that actually go into the field and do something, and the other ones say, well, you didn't do it quite right, or, hey, you did this wrong, or that type of thing. But, if you don't keep her name out there, look a little feller out here in Mockley that you guys were running for so long.
Edgy.
Yeah, and, Nancy Grace, what is it, a little black child, from a poor ghetto family, we just, she's not pretty enough. It's sad to say, but only the real pretty ones get the attention. The ugly little kids don't seem to get the attention, and that's sad. That is so sad.
But
I think we all agree that applies from childhood on.
Yeah, it does. It does. And it's unfortunate, man. It's just like if you got a good-looking stripper comes in there, she ain't got a whole lot of money, you would have represented her back in the day. But you let, some thug ass come in there and, want to be, and he ain't got no money. Well, you'll be like, I'm really kind of busy, sir.
Well, I hate to tell you this, but I've had more than my share walk in my office, and most of them are very shrewd businesswomen and are not what you think they are. And they don't want you to do that. They're willing to write a check, and most of them get paid in cash and have a whole bunch of bucks. And all my
friends, they've
made a lot of money representing these women and told me they're some of the best clients they've ever had them in terms of being able to get along with them and work with them. So
we're talking about looks, my brother. We weren't talking about all that financial shit. We just talking about, a good-looking person seems to catch more eye in the media, somebody like that than, somebody not, speaking especially with kids.
All I can tell you, Cobra, is go on my Facebook, take a look at my wife, and you'll see why I haven't been interested.
Oh, really? No, I got whacked in hacky jacky. Somebody told me go get tweet. What the hell's a tweet? So I hooked up a damn tweet. Hell, within 48 hours, the damn thing was hacked loose. I said, well, shit. You know, the FBI told me don't be messing around with a computer anymore, Cobra. You haven't been educated. I said, you know, you're right. I'm not supposed to play with a computer. A cell phone is about the most they'll let me have, and it doesn't have any 3G services. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Simon, don't you agree the world's a better place if Cobra doesn't have a computer?
The fact that I don't know how to use one, that's even better. Because if I did, Manny, shit. Man, I would, it's hard to tell what havoc I would create.
Okay. Danny, I want to throw a hypothetical at you. Let's assume that Casey Anthony takes good advice and hangs low. Suddenly her street value is zero. You have talked to a number of people that have been through the witness protection program. In fact, I've talked to a couple of your friends. It's not like they give you a barrel load of money and off you go. It's more like, okay, here's a new ID. You've got no background, and don't get into trouble. Otherwise, all bets are off. What on earth can Casey Anthony do?
Plenty.
Well, I think if she doesn't make a score here in the next few weeks or a couple of months, perhaps, and especially if she's going to have to divvy this up. I mean, if you got Baez and Mason or any of the other attorneys, I don't know what their arrangements are, if any of them are involved or how it's going to work out. But if she's got to share or anything she gets with other people, and of course IRS will be in there with their handout for some back taxes and so forth. I think her only value that I can see would be right now to take a polygraph, pass it, and go out and say something that people hadn't heard before, something that's truly newsworthy and can be believed. And when that is gone, when that time has passed, I mean, she's going to have to try to take some kind of training probably to get a job. I mean, I don't see what other value she has for big money.
Come on, Danny. You go between New York and Las Vegas. I mean, I see them girls all the time. They can't count past two, but they can count up to five Johns.
Legal income, huh?
Oh, gosh. Well, she ain't been legal so far. Why would she change now?
Good point, Mr. Cooper. Good point.
Well, you know, the real bottom line here comes back to your comment. I think she did nothing for Gus because she can't pass a lie detector test, and that means that she's got to watch herself, and she can't accept a lot of the offers on the table because I think that is a must. If she can't pass a lie detector test, I think it places a station in even greater jeopardy of putting her on the air. I mean, think about it.
Why did we bring up witness protection? I mean, how in the hell is she would never, first of all.
She would never, that's right. You're right, Cole.
Yeah, she couldn't qualify for no witness protection. My old partner, Simon, you remember, I sent you some stuff on Doc Christian. He was in witness protection. We were doing real good until he started advertising as a doctor and kind of used his old name again. But, you know, he had the name 007, and he should have been staying 007. But people don't go to 007's doctor offices. But they will go to a Doc Christian office, and I'll be damned. Out of witness protection you come. But witness protection, when you typically go in, and I know a lot of guys that have went into the system, and typically you get a new driver's license, you relocated to another part of the country somewhere, you're told to maintain a low profile, they will go ahead of you and try to, you know, put in a good word for you for a job. You usually get somewhere upwards of a few $1,000s in your pocket, and you're on your own, pal. You go from there and you stay low. And if you get in real serious trouble, you got a number that you have somebody call, and you give them another number, and you know, pretty soon a couple of U.S. Marshals will show up and figure out what's going on, and if you're that protected, you'll get away with some shit. But if you're not protected, then your status comes off and you're back into the free world again. So she can't qualify for no witness protection.
Oh,
she would have to, she'd
no,
have to
no.
Witness against somebody.
Whoa, Cobra, I wasn't suggesting that for one moment that, you know, she would qualify. It was more the point that, you know,
something like
the witness protection program could
shit,
not
brother, if she
protect
scores that $1 million, listen, if she scores that $1 million plus, and she really wants to know, my partner Tank, we've got a system set up. We will hide her ass that, Jesus, I have a hard time finding her.
Well, you know, I thought you were referring to a murder protection program, actually, Simon.
That's Denny's area. Denny can protect them.
Cobra.
Yes, sir.
You mentioned a minute ago about witness protection, and, you know, you're giving a couple of phone numbers to call in case things go bad for you.
Yeah, yeah.
Did I tell you the story about Frank Collada from the Chicago outfit when he was in witness protection?
No, sir, you did not. But share it with us, because I bet
okay.
you it has got some goosebumps coming.
He was in witness protection. He was brought back to Chicago to testify in a Chicago outfit trial. He did. The marshals took him to the airport. He went in, not through the walkway there, but they put him into, they put a stairway up to the front door, and he got in a special door. Got in his seat. Now, the marshals were supposed to wait until the plane actually took off. For some reason that day, they didn't. They left. The plane developed a mechanical problem and never left the gate, so everybody gets off. Lo and behold, coming off the plane after Frank are two Chicago hitmen.
Oh, God.
And they knew
you. God. Oh, Lord.
Frank hides behind a pillar in the airport until he can get over to a payphone, and he wants to get somebody out there because these guys, you know, there's a pretty good price on his head at the time. He calls the emergency number. It's been disconnected. They changed the number.
Shit.
Nobody bothered to tell him. So.
Oh, my God.
He had to call the FBI, and the FBI sprang into action. I guess there were some disciplinary issues with the marshals for leaving the airport ahead of time and so forth. But
sure there were.
I want better protection than that. That seemed like the marshals were working with the hitmen. Shit.
That's right. Exactly.
Well, you know what? Somebody on the chat said something that's pretty good where Casey can go. That would Mr. Lucky 917 said she can move in with Charlie Sheen.
Yeah, I saw that.
That's crazy shit.
That would work perfect. She is kind of his taste, actually. She is.
Okay, so here's the real question. Where is she? Is she hiding in plain sight in Florida? Or is she in California?
Yep.
Dave Neckel assures me that, you know, she's not staying with him. And, you know, Jen and I can attest to the fact that she's certainly not staying with us. And I don't think she's staying with Manny, because I suspect that Ashley might have one or two things to say about it.
Yeah.
It's pretty quiet here in Orlando, Simon. Nobody has seen her. I've been by Suburban Drive 3 or 4 different times in the last couple of days. She's nowhere around here. Word has it that she's still in Cali, but she has been known to be slipping around other places, and Baez is, you know, wherever Baez is, she ain't far behind pretty much. But right now, as far as word on the street is, she ain't around Orlando unless she is changed up 100%, but all her old stomping grounds and places that she would go, and friends and different folks that know her and know how to get a hold of her, nope, she is totally mushroomed right now.
Do you think she could walk down the street without being recognized?
Suppose she put on dyed her hair blonde or red or something. You know,
yeah.
Would that make enough of a difference? I mean, if
she'll
go
be
to
the,
some,
she'll be the head spinning around, looking around, looking around, looking around, looking around, looking all suspicious. I don't give a shit what she puts on.
Oh, you know, you look at some of those. You look at some of those women in the 1960s, early 70s that you know, that belonged to the Students for a Democratic Society or whatever, and they're finally caught like 40 years later. You know,
yeah,
they lived amongst everyone. But what did they do to change their looks? Maybe they dyed their hair. You know, and before, you know, during that time, they were on. You know, they had posters hanging in post offices. Stuff.
Yeah, we didn't have telephone and
a
computer service stuff we got nowadays and word travel. Everybody
got
iPhone in their pocket. And that's a big, big difference. Trust me, if she's in Orlando, she's damn good. But nobody has seen her, no places that she would hang out unless she's went and checked into a hotel room and just caught up on some more sleep. But somebody's been caged up 23 hours a day. They want to be out moving around. But, you know, she's someplace obscured right at the moment, and she's trying to figure out what the hell to do. I heard she walked into the guy's office and said, "Hey, well, you got the check?" Shit.
Yeah,
we got it right here.
I know.
You know, coming back
money.
To Dave's comment, you're talking about Catherine Salaya, and the truth is that when her crimes were committed, one, there wasn't as much press and media as there now. There weren't 48 hours, there weren't 10 Most Wanted on TV, which really helped her a great deal. And she was kind of a secondary player at the time because everybody was looking for Patty Hearst. And sadly, I was here in Los Angeles with the SLA problem, if you remember the SLA, Symbionese Liberation Front. In fact, they machine gunned a market about five blocks from my house and killed a couple people who worked there. So really, it was not one of those situations where what she was involved in was, you know, the top of the list. She was really a fringe player until much later when suddenly she was the last one they hadn't arrested yet, and suddenly they went, wow, you know, we never caught her, and then they started moving her up the old priority list.
You're worth $1 million on the street, you know, and you got a deal riding on this for about $1 million for somebody to get a picture or something. You're going to try to protect that best you can. And believe me, the defense team did a good job getting her off. They're going to do a damn good job keeping her obscured until they can sign the deal and get her in front of a camera or whatever it is they tend to do and get her some pocket money so she can move around a little bit. And I think, I'd just say about 3 to 3 months, 90 days, you know, people get tired. A lot of fugitives the same way. They run like hell for the first couple of months, and then they get, you know, a passive overview. And once they get a passive overview, it's over. It's flat out over. They're easier to catch after the heat's run off of them a little bit. You know, at first they're willing to do anything, and then they start to get a, you know, passive overview of things, and next thing you know, hey, there he is. That's what happened to this old boy up here.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, Manny, I have a question for you. Again, it's a hypothetical. Let's pretend that Casey decides to drop out of view for however long. The civil suits are mounting. What are her legal obligations? Does she have to come out at some point to deal with them?
Of course she does. And what happens is if she doesn't do that is they basically publish a subpoena and by publishing the local newspapers, and they sooner or later obtain a judgment against her. So the fact remains that she just doesn't get to just get up and walk away and say, gee, you can't find me, you can't sue me, because every state has provisions for finding people who hide. So, yeah, she can hide for so long, but sooner or later, and by the way, her lawyers can answer for her, they can do everything else, she doesn't have to be around until the day they want her deposition or trial starts, and she has to show up for that. So, yes, she will have to deal with it, and I don't think she'll avoid it, unless, of course, she's penniless. But all this comes back to what I keep saying. There's still an issue of guilt or innocence here. People believe that she is guilty. And the only way she could change anybody is if she got him and said, I'm not guilty, and did a whole show on it, and then sat down and I took a lie detector test. What if she denied it on screen and everything else, and the network says, well, we ran this lie detector test, and we hired FBI agents such and such conducted, and she passed it. Then everybody would go, wow, maybe we ought to look at this again. Or they would have some other viewpoint, or they'd go, well, I don't agree with the colleague, whatever it is. But until she does that, I don't see any chance of her getting any kind of pay interview, nor anyone to listen to her, because if they advertise, listen to Casey Anthony, she's appearing, and guess what? She passed the lie detector test. Oh, my God, I can't even imagine what the ratings would be for that, right?
Correct.
Oh, you hit it on the head. But here's the thing. Could she pass that lie detector test?
Well, we all know the answer to that.
The problem is Casey believes everything she says.
No, don't buy into that, Jan. The bottom line is, if she could pass that lie detector's test, and it were no big deal, believe me, she would have signed something already. If someone said, okay, all you have to do is pass a lie detector test, and I'm going to give you $5 million, and she knows she's innocent, and she's going to pass that test, she'd be putting that money in the bank right now. But if someone is saying to themselves, wow, you know, I can't pass that test, I'm not going to take a test, then guess what? They're in no hurry to show up and basically collect that money because they cannot meet the requirements of it.
Well, the way I see it is no network, and only a network, has the money to, you know, invite Miss Anthony for an exclusive interview and for her to sit down and say, well, yeah, the little girl drowned in the pool, just like I said, can I have my $1 million? I mean, it's not happening.
Right.
I mean,
not going to happen. And that, to me, is why you don't see her running around grabbing money, because she's got to find someone who's willing to let her do a show and not take a lie detector test.
Or a fake one.
Well, those are pretty hard. I've seen people trying to fake lie detector tests, and they're hard to do because the people administered have a reputation, and unless you pay the guy $1 million to fake it, he would be destroying his career forever. And almost every one of those guys, as we all know, are former law enforcement. So I don't see a former law enforcement officer motivated to give her some kind of break like that. And it's pretty hard to avoid a payoff.
All right. Look, let's move on a little bit. But there's a rumor floating around. And Dave, you might be the best one to talk about this. George and Cindy apparently are taking a well-deserved vacation.
Yeah, I guess they're in the Bahamas, I think. I think Wes got the story first. Somebody sent him a video from the from Orlando Executive Airport, which is north of the International Airport. And I guess it was a guy, that, like a businessman from East Orlando. I don't remember his name now offhand, but I'd never heard of him. And he said he just wanted, you know, he just felt bad for him and he wanted to let him get away from the area for a while. So I don't think there was anything nasty or, you know, anything like that. It wasn't, I don't believe, any kind of a trip to meet up with Casey anywhere. You know, there are people that are like that, that just donate, you know, their services or whatever. It was his private plane. So I don't think there's anything really to it. They just jumped at the chance to get away from Orlando.
Cobra,
David Deese, there it is, yeah.
Cobra, I want to go back to the civil suits for a moment. That there's one that's been filed by Zanny the Nanny. Apparently there's a new one by a diver that is against Casey, you know, wasting his time and money.
Tim Miller. Mm-hmm.
Well, there's the Tim Miller suit for $115,000.
Leonard Padilla.
$112,000.
You got Leonard Padilla?
Right. Are there any other civil suits that you might care to share with us that have yet been filed?
There's several other ones that have not yet, to my knowledge, been filed, and the reason being is our attorney has been swamped for the last week or so, and of course there's a civil suit that's due, should be up and ready this week on the, well, it all depends. It could be this week, next week, but there's one in making for the National Enquirer. There's another one in for Cindy and George Anthony. There's another one that has a triage of folks in it. And then they had the grand finale, which includes bloggers and all kinds of shit. It's the craziest damn thing you've ever seen. But we got a lot of work to do, buddy. A lot of work. I mean, just filing the stuff. But so, cause we don't want them just to be shut down, you know, when they go in. Because some of them, a couple of them, are actual attorneys that are being sued personally and corporately. So, you know, attorneys are pretty slick. You know, if Manny got a lawsuit from me today, it would be like, ah, shit, judge, he's just trying to do X, Y, Z, and they throw it out. So we've got to make sure that all the documents are in there so that the judge says, no, we're going to let this go to trial because there's too many things here I can't rule on. So there's so many of them. It's incredible. But the biggest one, the nicest one that's should be set fairly soon is the National Enquirer litigation, which there is talk that probably would just settle out of court.
Well, the National Enquirer has a tendency to do that, as indeed does the News of the World.
Yeah, we're not opposed to that. They have enough money that, you just take those logs and throw them on another fire, pretty much. So, yeah, we're not opposed to that. I mean, those things have already been, you know, that's why we didn't
really want to put a lot of work into it if all of a sudden it was going to reach some type of a settlement, and that could still be in the making. But the case, the one that doesn't involve, you know, my side, is the one that I'm looking forward to see happening, is the one that Kronk has filed against Leonard Padilla. Now, Leonard has been sitting back just chewing at the bit, waiting for that to come. In fact, it was mentioned that it might happen, and it was like, oh, please do, please do. And I'll be damned, they filed it. And I think that that case is probably going to bring out a whole lot of interesting information that will spark this whole thing off again, because there were so many things that Leonard could not speak to or speak of due to different privies that he had with certain folks. But now that this lawsuit has been filed against him from Kronk, it's going to open the door to some of those things, because he's going to have to bring those forward and either to answer his challenges in the litigation. So I haven't seen the actual suit, and I know it's subject to change. I know they didn't throw everything at the wall to begin with, but slander and defamation were, you know, topics of that litigation, as I understand it.
Okay. Manny, you're the legal mind. I keep reflecting back on the O.J. Simpson trial. OJ's dream team walked away when the money was gone. Yeah, they basically said, OJ, we got you off. You know, we have our $20 million. Well, they didn't quite get it, but yeah, I mean, they didn't do bad. Will Byers and Mason stay with Casey Anthony? Or will they cut their losses and go, okay, we got you off. We're not getting any money. You're on your own.
Well, I think sometimes the issue is
how long do you feel obligated to a client before you move on with your other work? And that's really the issue here right now is, and everybody's different. I have no idea how long they will feel obligated to her. And it may be shorter than everybody thinks. But, I mean, your representation only goes so far. It's not like you're deserting a client. You have other, lawyers have other work to do. They have other things to do. They don't sign on for the rest of your life. And the fact is that if he's got her out of this case, you know, he's got other things to do. His income stops. So it's off to the next thing. And he's probably going to be appointed to another case and another high-profile case based upon this because, of course, the results prompted it. So, you know, he's going to have a lot to do.
Yeah, but not so fast, Manny. His lawyer fees were barely over $100,000, as some of the reportings that we've seen.
Well, but that was for the trial. It didn't,
right.
It didn't differentiate what his total fees were during the preparation for the trial. Because I looked at that very closely, and I wondered why they didn't list the entire amount of money. So you can't really rely on that, Cobra.
Well, the thing is ABC, if I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong, but if I'm not mistaken, there were certain folks that put up money for this. So Baez, to my knowledge, for the most part of his stuff, has been paid. And he cannot lose his meal ticket right now because his meal ticket, I mean, if she only owes a couple of hundred grand, she is worth several million plus to him. So it would be very foolish for them to, you know, do like they did in the O.J. Simpson. In the O.J. Simpson trial, there's $5 million here, $5 million there. And when F. Lee Bailey dropped, everybody else, but these guys had plenty of money anyway, and they already had fame and fortune. So in this case...
Well, wait a minute. Lee Bailey was a peripheral player, and Lee was only in for a limited amount of involvement, and that's all that he was going to do in the case. And the fact is that all those guys had very, very busy law practices, and needless to say, Johnny Cochran's it was an extraordinarily busy lawyer when he was alive, and so he really had other things to do too. It wasn't like he just got up and deserted her. I mean, people have work to do.
True. And
well,
his law firm
was still taking cases, you know,
true.
All
and
along.
My point is that Baez has only been in the game, you know, a couple, 3-4 years. This put him top of the food chain for all to speak of. So either, A, he can sit and ride off of this for a while. I'm sure he can write books, and he can do this, and he can do a lot of things. Or he can go ahead and try to wing another case. I doubt
that
he would get the same favor.
Speaking of the food chain, you know, we haven't seen Judge Perry, you know, chew him up and spit him out yet. You know, he threatened to do these sorts of things to him. So I don't know. I mean, Baez might lose his license. And he's got a future with us.
You're right there in Orlando, and I'm sure that you also understand that the judge may take a back seat to another investigation that is going on right now through a subsidiary and a cohort of Baez's to where some very pointed questions are being asked. And if those questions come back favorable, that these practices were practiced upon, then Baez not only will lose his license, but Baez, as I have said from day one, will become an award of the state. He will end up in jail. Period. End of story.
Well, you know, I don't wish him any ill will or whatever, but I've watched lawyers do so many despicable things in my career that I'm always shocked when they lose their license, and I'll be equally shocked if he loses his license because I find state bars to be borderline impotent, not because they support lawyers so damn much, it's because they just don't do anything.
Manny, this is not coming from the Florida State Bar, to which, you know, there's complaints filed every day on lawyers, and, you know, depending on how much and who they know and this, that, and the other. This is coming from a higher power. He would lose his license for the simple reason that he was incarcerated. I don't believe that the Florida Bar would do anything to Baez because, quite frankly, they're all, you know, he's a hot child right now, hot topic. But I think the powers be, and Dave, I'm surprised you don't know a little bit about this. I did mention in passing to you, Simon, that the investigation has already begun, and they may very well be nearing that end.
Okay.
Well,
I'll tell you what. Let's bring Denny back into the discussion. Denny, I was absolutely amazed. You know, 8 weeks, or pretty close to 8 weeks of jury sequestration. How come Fox or HLN did not have cameras outside the hotel? How come we haven't seen any of the hotel workers on, Nancy Grace?
That's a good question, Simon. I hadn't even thought about it, to tell you the truth. You'd think somebody would have had their cameras and their reporters and their agents and so forth, looking to get a hold of these people, anybody that had anything, even on their periphery, such as a maid at the hotel or whatever, but anybody that could tell some kind of stories about the jurors and the jury and stuff. I don't know, but it is a good question. You'd think somebody would have done that. Now, I would like, before you move on to someone else, to ask Manny a question.
Sure.
And that is, obviously, it was a major coup or a major victory for the defense team, Baez and company. But from a lawyer's perspective, Manny, what they did, Casey got acquitted. I had the impression, I could be wrong, but that even the defense team was surprised at that she got off on everything except the lion's share. I thought they were somewhat surprised when that came down. Now, there was no Perry Mason moment, if you will, in here. It was Baez didn't get some witness up there and have somebody confess to something or that type of thing. So was this a case of brilliant lawyering that, just a super job as of courtroom presence and presentation of evidence and cross-examination and so on and so forth? Or was it maybe a little bit that a weak prosecution case that anybody could have beat? Or, in other words, once the verdict and the uproar over the verdict wears off and people are looking at the actual courtroom defense case, how will Baez and his team stack up? Are they going to be seen as brilliant attorneys who won an unwinnable case, or will they not quite get that amount of glory down the road?
Well, first of all, we're in a country that generally only remembers who wins and who loses, and you can look at sports, unless you're a sports fanatic, most people only remember a final score, and they don't remember how somebody wins. So, no, and in terms of a case, people can talk about great lawyers and stuff. They're just great facts. And there's an old quote from Bum Phillips, the football coach, about Don Shula, the Miami Dolphin coach, that he can take urine and beat hisn and hisn and beat urine. You ever heard that quote? Bottom line is, no, there aren't a lot of those lawyers. Someone once said to me, I thought it was a great compliment, that I win all the cases I should and more than half the ones I shouldn't. But I don't know that Baez is in that kind of mold. It will take him a lot more years and cases to make that decision. But that decision will be made by individuals and not by how his cases go. People only remember when he loses. Lawyers know whether people have a good case or not. And I've said to you that the legal community in Los Angeles was just disgusted after the Simpson case because we felt the prosecutor committed malpractice. And everyone I know still feels that way to this day. But the general public always felt sorry for the lawyers and felt that they got screwed by a jury when the rest of us feel that they put on a really piss-poor case and contributed to losing their own case. But I wouldn't, there are things that I felt the prosecution did wrong in the Baez case, in the Anthony case. But, I agree with Cobra. Cobra would say, they haven't proved anything. you know, they don't have a cause of death. They don't have this and do that. And I would say, I agree with you, but I think they're going to find him guilty anyway. And the real odd thing about this jury was that they didn't buy into the typical prosecution's case and just say, well, if they're being prosecuted, they must be guilty. And there's a mentality like that in our country right now. So I would say this has to do with the fact that the prosecution didn't have a good case, and we're not able to convince a jury to convict her just because they brought a case. Now, that may sound strange to some people, but there's a lot of it. There are a lot of people that you see let out of jail later in life and found to be, because they were later found to not to be guilty, but because the prosecutor pressed them so hard during the trial, the jury basically found them guilty. So I would think in this particular case, Baez did a competent job. He didn't do a great job. He made a lot of mistakes at times, but, you know, that happens in murder trials. It's a very inexact science. I mean, it's not like you go out there and you just open up your little model and go, if I say this, that happens. I mean, that's not what happens. What happens is every day is a new adventure. It's almost like crossing the United States in the 1860s. Every day the sun goes up and it's new territory and you don't know what the heck to expect. And so from that standpoint, and I know I probably talked too long, I think that's a better description of the way these type of cases go. And so anyway, make a long story short, he did what he had to do, but was it great? No, I don't think it was great. I really don't. Was it bad? No, it wasn't bad. What happened is he got enough to cross to a jury, and the jury happened to be the kind of jury that listened to him and ruled in his favor. But you could have impaneled 10 other people, and no matter what Baez said, she would have been found guilty. Then you could have impaneled 10 other people, and they could have been hung. And that's the issue with our system of is that we provide justice that's unique in this world, but it's far from perfect, it's far from mistake-free, and the results are horribly inconsistent. And I'm going to quit there.
Okay, I do have a question, if y'all don't mind. And I know you're probably going to say you've explained this to me a million times, but I still don't understand it.
It wouldn't be for
why?
Me.
Why?
Might be from your husband, darling, but it won't be from me.
No, I'm just serious. I don't understand. If these attorneys knew that this child was dead, or if they claiming that, I mean, even though the whole time, I mean, 2.5 years, they claimed at the beginning that the nanny took her, and then it was somebody else, Jesse Grund, and then this one, and then that one. But this is all before the baby was found. After she was found, they were blaming everybody else in the world except for Casey. But yet, they come out now and say that they knew all along that she had drowned. They were going by Casey's story, of course. I mean, I can't get that out of my head, that just because they're saying that, it doesn't mean it's true. But at the same time, why were they allowed to waste all the money that was wasted on this trial if this was an accident? And
well,
they admit now that they knew from the beginning. I mean, Chaney Mason even admitted when he was brought onto the case that he knew about it. But yet they all blamed everybody else publicly. So
I'll
how can they get away with that?
You want to know my opinion on it? My opinion is that they saved the drowning as a last resort. And when Mason came on board, he said, you know what? We can just say this was a drowning. There's no way in heck that anyone could prove it otherwise.
Interview, just
I don't care what he
interview.
Says in the interview.
No, I'm just saying he
Mason
said it publicly. He said it publicly that he knew whenever when he came onto the case.
Well,
I just don't understand how they can do it
right?
And get away with it.
I'll tell you, Jan,
well,
it's quite easy. You can throw any kind of shit around that you want until you're before a jury of your peers. That day, that miracle day that you're standing before God Almighty, you can lie, cheat, steal, come up with
but
all kinds
that
of
right?
rouge. It is, and if you look at the Constitution, until you are before a jury of your peers, somebody who's going to actually, you know, separate the fly shit from the pepper and come up with a ruling on it, you can say or do just about anything that you want, and and throw it out there in the courtroom of public opinion, and yeah, it wastes a lot of time. But listen, it's no different than any other case. In fact, this is the murder radio show here now, and a good friend of mine was murdered last Sunday morning. Her and her son went off to a party, came back home. He calls the police and says, "Hey, 5:36 in the morning, my mama's missing. Anybody seen my mama?" "No, ain't nobody seen your mama, but we'll bring out the dogs and the horses and the lanterns and the shotguns and the flashlights, and we'll figure out what's going on." And for 3 days, he sat in the front yard asking the neighbors, "You got any videotape surveillance at your house? Did you see anybody come in get my mama? Did you see anything happen? Do you know where your mama's at?" "No." All this taxpayer money, I mean, 2 blocks from me, all week long. Son of a bitch ended up killing her damn self, put her body, seen on videotape, in the trunk of the car, and took her around the corner, 1,500 feet, if 1,600 is too far, 14 is too shy, 1,500 feet, another similar situation, throws her side of the road, wrapped up in some bullshit, throws his clothes in the dumpster, and "I ain't seen my mama." So it happens every single day, every single day. And until you get in the courtroom, it don't matter what they say. You can lie, cheat, steal, do whatever you want to do until you get before them. And so, is it right?
But they were in a courtroom, though.
Yeah, but is it right? No, it's not right. But you know
that's
what?
That's my point.
There's no
why
penalty.
Is it
right? No
why
penalty.
Is it allowed?
Because
it should not be allowed.
Not a lie.
Because there's
how
no
can you prove it's not a lie?
Well, I'm going by what he's saying right now. He's having the nerve to come out in the open public and say, "Well, I knew it all along."
Yeah.
Okay,
well,
if he knew it all along, why is it okay for him to go in court and say that somebody else killed this child?
Well, wait a minute here. First of all, let's ask a couple basic questions, okay? Number one is, assume he went to the prosecutor and said that she did drown in the story that became the story that controlled the case. Nobody believed it when they said it later. What makes you believe that had they said it sooner, somebody would have believed it sooner? The prosecution would have dismissed it, and, of course, they would have prepared better for it at trial. So, basically, he stuck with it. Also, remember, an attorney cannot blow the whistle on his client. Sometimes you know things that you can't repeat, that just eat at you, but you can't repeat them. So that's a problem for every lawyer, and there's a time when they can say them, and they do say them, but there's a time you can't. I mean, I just have scores of those, and I could tell you a story very quickly about someone told me something that was just awful, and he didn't have the courage to tell his wife, so guess what he did? He said to me, "Manny, when I die, I want you to tell my wife this story." And I said to him, "Thanks a lot." And he died, a very famous person, and I was stuck telling his wife this story, which I managed to put off for quite a bit of time because she was grieving and I just hadn't seen her. She hadn't wanted to talk to anybody. So it allowed me to put my head in the sand for a while, but it didn't get away from me. I finally had to do it. And lawyers don't like doing that, and it's awful, and it was an awful experience. I mean, I had to take a deep breath and go, okay, I got to do this. I don't have a choice. And I did it. But I sure as heck didn't like it, and I sure as heck didn't want to do it. But that's part of what goes with your oath of office. And that's the problem. Even if they wanted to say something, nobody would have believed them, and it wouldn't have changed, in my mind, any direction that the case went. Do you think it would have changed?
I still don't believe it.
You have to tell her, Manny, that he was gay or something? What'd you have to tell her?
Oh, okay. And I think that is a great way to segue into another story that we didn't have any chance to talk about last week, but I do want to talk about this week, and that is the death of Lawrence King, 14-year-old kid killed in cold blood. A shot in the back of the head, and then another one in the back of the head. But get this, it was in a classroom. Manny, do you want to give us the thumbnail sketch?
Yeah, I think I did. I'll do it again. Basically, Lawrence King was a, you know, a challenged young man with emotional problems who at times thought he was gay. And too much is being said about him being gay as much as he was just totally lost. And he's, a, you know, basically an emotionally limited human being who was probably educationally limited. And he, you know, girls at school had given him dresses. Sometimes they'd show up with makeup and dresses on. And he was just sort of the class, you know, strange kid. And what is the problem throughout our schools in the United States is there's no way of dealing with this child. When I was younger, they would have put him in a special school and dealt with him, but now they don't. They want to put him in the population, so the teachers were told by the principal to ignore him. Well, most of the students saw he was mentally ill and just basically took it lightly. Some adopted him, some felt sorry for him. But one of the kids, Brandon McErnany, was in his neo-Nazi baptism period, learning the doctrines of neo-Nazism, which he now claims he didn't, but the facts seem to say otherwise. And one day Lawrence King said, "I love you," which, you know, I mean, big deal. So you got a mentally disturbed 14-year-old saying, "I love you." I mean, it's not the end of the world. Most kids would have just laughed and go, "Ah, he's sick." So anyway, make a long story short, it so incensed him, this gay kid said, "I love you," that he came into class with a gun, sat behind him, and I use the word execute because when you take a gun at the back of someone's head who's not looking, who's less than 2 feet away from you, and shoot him in the back of the head, that's an execution. Then he looked around the room, according to all the people in the room, stared a few kids in the eye, and then looked back at this poor Lawrence King and shot him, I think, twice more, which to me is not only overkill, but it's certainly a sign of his anger and his prejudices. So he lay there dead. So now it's 3 years later, and this kid's 18, about 6 inches taller. And on trial in Simi Valley, which, by the way, is where Rodney King was trialed, so it's another King trial in Simi Valley, which is adjacent to San Fernando Valley. And oddly enough, it's a bedroom community for the LAPD and the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department, who can't afford to buy homes in a lot of the other areas. But Simi Valley is a beautiful place, and if you look up crime stats, the little triangle of Westlake, Thousand Oaks, and Simi Valley, which border on L.A. County, have the lowest crime rates in the country. But I have a joke. If you see a black man in those three cities, ask yourself, which professional football team did they play? And if it's a young man, who's his father? And in most cases, it's an ex-NFL player, because Westlake houses everybody from Joe Montana down the line, Tiger Woods, all of them. You name them, all live there, and Simi Valley is a similar type of place. So it's an all-white jury, to my knowledge. I haven't really checked the jury, but there's a minority in that jury. I'll be very, very surprised. So the issue becomes whether or not this is a quote, gay panic case, because basically the defense is saying this gay guy harassed him sexually so much he lost it and, you know, lost his temper and emotionally accidentally shot him. Let me see. You come to class with a gun. That's a lot of time to carry it, premeditated. You sit behind the kid, you shoot him, and then you look around everyone else and think about it, and you shoot him a couple more times. That's a very tough defense. But
well,
with the real
Columbine,
issue,
how do you get a gun into school these days?
Right.
Well, listen, schools have a lot of entrances and exits, and it's virtually impossible to have a medical dental detector or that mad rush because everybody's late for school in the morning. So there's some areas in South Los Angeles where they're absolutely mandatory, where schools are shut off with one entrance and one exit, as they probably are in some parts of New York City and other cities. But Simi Valley and Oxnard, which is sort of a peaceful blue-collar crime, city with a very low crime rate, everyone describes it as blue-collar. Well, I have a lot of friends there. There's a beach in Oxnard Ventura there where movie producers own million-dollar homes. You've got the Port Hueneme military base. But it's a really nice city. I've been going there since I was 5 years old. I mean, my oldest friend lives there, and that's a place you can walk down the street in the middle of the night. So the thought that you have to suddenly have security at school be almost like you guys picking a small town in southern Ohio or Illinois with a population of 75 or 100,000 people and feeling that you need to have a security entrance and metal detector at the entry to school. So I think when you look at this neighborhood, it would be shocking that you would need that. So that's part of the problem.
Okay. I see a bit of a legal minefield with this case. Am I correct in that thought, Manny?
Well, yes. What this case stands for, and it's been called the gay panic defense. So I guess the bottom line is for people who don't care for the gay community, they now have to carry a gun. And if a gay man comes up and propositions them in the bar, then I guess they have to pull a gun out and step behind him and execute him in his seat, because they're saying that I kill somebody because he's gay and he said something offensive to me. Well, I'm heterosexual, so that means that if a hooker, says the wrong thing to me, I can shoot her? Or, you know, there isn't a man in this world that hasn't had a gay man at some point or another make some kind of come on to him. I mean, if you start allowing people to shoot people for this, it's crazy. But the real legal issue is California is basically invoking a law that says you, with a jury instruction, that you instruct the jury to disregard the person's sexuality. I think we're the only state that has it, and I think every state should have it. When a person is murdered like this, it doesn't matter whether they're gay, heterosexual, or green. What if that were a heterosexual who said something to this guy's girlfriend, and he said, wow, this guy's, you know, a Latino, or he's black, or I don't like his mother, and he said something to my girlfriend, I'm now going to go into a relationship panic and shoot him in the head. So from gay
good
panic,
point.
What's next?
That's a good point. Yeah, hey, Cobra?
Yo!
Yeah, I have a question for you.
Who's this?
Dave. next time you're up in Orlando, can I give you a back rub?
Yeah. In the back of the damn head, for real.
I think we're missing a joke here.
This religion, if you will, this... You know, I understand the neo-Nazi tradition as well. I understand the gay community. I mean, I deal with every walk of life. In my business, I deal with so many. And for the other side, the call them skinhead, neo-Nazi, far left, right wing. All Americans are supposed to be blonde-haired and blue-eyed. Whatever his education is in that field. It's a case of one religion, if you will, meeting with another one. Bad move for a gay guy to put a move on a neo-Nazi, same as a neo-Nazi to do it, to offend a black person or a Hispanic or something. But back to that school, they don't have metal detectors there. They only have metal detectors in ethnic schools where they got all kinds of folks running around with guns and stuff, and, you know, like Chicago or this place or Miami. And we just had one down here where... Two Cuban males, one happened to say something. Listen, I don't want my girlfriend being riding you to school every day, okay? I don't want you to find some other way to get your happy ass to school. I don't want my girlfriend driving you to school. Well, the other kid didn't listen. So when he steps out of the car and walks to the classroom, he pulls a knife and stabs the shit out of him. I told you I didn't want you riding with my girlfriend no more. So I think what it is we're in a pressure cooker, and, you know, everybody's blabbing on this one and raising and pushing their medicine this way or that way, and after a while, the pressure cooker just comes off, and somebody's going to kill somebody. That's just the way it is. We've been in this culture since this culture has been a culture.
Okay. There's one more case that I really want to talk a little bit about. And I'm going to read it. James Lee Troutman is accused of raping and strangling a 9-year-old girl, Skylar Kaufman.
Kill him. Just freaking kill him, bro. I don't give a shit. There's no excuse for that. Kill him.
Yeah. It was his fiancée's daughter. The badly beaten body of 9-year-old Skylar Kaufman was found wrapped in a blanket and thrown in a garbage bin behind her apartment block in Saladin, which apparently is near Philadelphia. Troutman has admitted he strangled Skylar with his own hands and said that her head hit the basement floor a couple of times at least. He told investigators it was like a whiteout. He just snapped. According to an affidavit, he said, "I got rid of her. Once I took her down there, you know, as in the basement, I knew she could get me into trouble." He allegedly wrapped her body in a blanket, carried her outside, and threw her in the nearby dumpster, leaving a trail of blood behind. Then he went back home, took a shower, and sat down to eat with his fiancée, the mother of the little girl. Isn't that the most shocking thing?
It's very cold.
I'm not shocked by it. The problem is, in our country, we're not detecting these people and getting them off the streets early enough. And we just, and by the way, I believe that, wasn't this the guy who locked up one of the neighbor's kids and the mother had complained to the police and they did nothing?
The little girl and her friend, the one that he murdered and her friend,
right.
He locked up in his apartment. And
yeah, and
the
I
cops
look at
didn't
this.
Do anything to him about it.
No, I mean, you know, and their excuse, I mean, I forgot what the excuse was. I almost started laughing. It was the dumbest thing I've ever heard. You know, basically, you know, you can't get the police to do what they need to do. I had a case where a teenage girl stole my wife's phone, and I reported the police. I did my homework. I had my PI locator because she tried to connect the phone, and iPhones are something that are so easily traceable. I figured out right away. I gave the police the information, generally where she lived, what school, high school she attended to. She's senior in high school, and, you know, they still haven't arrested her. They just don't seem to give a shit.
The district attorney said that you have to, she said that you have to have a crime take place in order to file charges, and everyone did what they were supposed to do, and unfortunately it wasn't enough to prevent the death of the child. But, I mean, if they would have put him in jail and arrested him whenever that happened, and another thing, too, I don't understand what the mother of this little girl was still doing with this man after she had reported this about him anyway.
Well, she didn't report him. It was a neighbor to report him. She claimed that she was shocked that this guy would do anything, and I can't believe any woman can live with a man that long and know what he'll do and not do.
That's what I'm saying. It doesn't matter really who reported him, but he was still reported. And how could she still have anything to do with this man, knowing what he had done to her daughter and her friend?
It wasn't her daughter. It was the girls next door. It wasn't her daughter that reported it. How do we know she even knew? I mean, do we know that the police bothered to go there and say that the guy you're living with is under investigation? I mean, that was something I tried to figure out in the article, and I saw nothing that indicated that she knew or should have known. So if they would have put her on notice, it might have saved the child's life, too.
Yeah, well, that's true. Okay, well, maybe I read it wrong, but that's
Either way, they weren't clear.
The police should have done something about it.
Absolutely.
It blows me away.
Okay, I'm going to prevent an argument from starting by going to Denny Griffin. Denny, you've been following another story, Jackie Sue Waller. Do you want to give us a thumbnail on that really sad story?
Yeah, Jackie Waller, mother of triplets. This is a story out of Missouri. And she'd been missing since June 1. She and her estranged husband on that day were in the court for divorce proceeding. After court, her husband, Clay Waller, asked her to meet him at the residence, their former marital residence, I guess. And supposedly one of the triplets was there, and she was going to pick the child up, and they were going to have some further discussion. Well, she went to the house. It turned out the child was not there. And according to Clay Waller, he and Jackie got into a heated argument, and she walked out and left the area on foot. And her car was discovered the next day, and so on and so forth. She hasn't been seen since. We had her father on the Crime Wire show last week, and her mother, and they are convinced she's dead and that he's responsible. He is not cooperating in the investigation, according to the police. And it's just a real, real sad situation. The triplets are now in the care of the Jackie's sister.
Don't they have him named as a person of interest in the case?
He's a person of interest, but there's been no arrest at this point.
Right.
So obviously they're, you know, a little shorter. They think they're short on the probable cause here. But it is sad. And Simon, before we discuss this any further, I'd like to jump back, if I could, to the Larry King case and ask Manny something. Do Larry King's parents have any civil remedy or a cause of action civilly for the school not doing anything? In other words, obviously somebody should have known this boy had issues and had problems and was antagonizing people, apparently, or was subject to being bullied or picked on, whatever. Does the school have any obligation at all if they sense or if they're aware of potential problems or problems that could lead to violence? Are they under any obligation to do anything, or is it strictly let it go and ignore it?
Well, no, I think they are under obligation. And what was interesting is I raised this last week is apparently just before the incident, the teacher pulled over this kid, McGurney, and said to him, you know, you should be a leader in this class. Where do you want to take your this class to? Where do you want to take your classmates to? And his response is somewhere they don't want to go. Well, my goodness, you know, that tells you he's a problem right there. Although the teacher testified that she wasn't aware that the deceased child, Larry King, even knew the other guy, which I find that hard to believe, too. But then again, you know, that can happen in schools. But it more than slips through the crack. I mean, the truth is that a child is dead because of the school adopted a very laissez-faire attitude about what to do with this child that didn't fit in. And that's one of the things that bothers me is the way schools are being run now is this one can just continue to happen because they're making no provisions at all what to do with it. And, of course, some of it I go back to the days when Ronald Reagan changed the laws and eliminated all the funding for mental health. So instead of people getting treated for mental health, they end up going home with the attitude, well, it's like the Depression. Everybody has to take care of the mentally ill members of their family because the government can't afford to do it. But a lot of us, particularly lawyers, feel that the cost to our community is much higher without these people being dealt with at a different phase. We have become a country that's reactionary. We should be a country that looks at these problems and takes steps in advance to solve them. We could save a fortune. When they talk to me about the cost of Medicare, they talk to me about the cost of all these other things in our country, my response always is, you can slow this down and you can reduce these costs if you take the time to sit down and find a solution that prevents these. So they need to identify these kids. And I believe that the minute a child starts to become a neo-Nazi, he's dangerous, and he's dangerous to the system because neo-Nazis are disenfranchised people who don't fit in. And that alone is a reason for him to be considered dangerous. And that's your point, isn't it?
Exactly.
Dave, I want to bring you in. I know that you don't know a great deal about this case, but does it shock you that this could be happening in a school near you?
Yeah, you know, excuse me, but you got to remember that, when I grew up, it was in New Jersey, and it was a rural part of New Jersey, and there was no racism really where I came from. And then, you know, that's one thing. And we had gay kids in school. We never had any problems with that either. But, you know, you move to Florida, and you see a little bit of a difference once you're not inside the city of Orlando, but the outskirts. I mean, you still have, when I first moved here in 81, I could still see old gas stations with, they're broken down and not open for anything, but you'd see the water fountains that were for colors and the bathrooms for colors. And so, you know, you kind of get used to that a little bit, even though it's not apparent, you know, the past is apparent, not the present, but still, once you get out of Orlando proper, you're going to run into people that don't have much room for I guess, they don't have tolerance for people that they don't accept. And they're right, and everybody else is wrong. So, yeah, I don't expect to see that in schools, though. But you see gangs here now. You see more of that than you see racism or prejudice over types of gays and that sort of thing.
Okay, there's one last case that I really do think deserves some airtime, and I'm hoping that Jen has her notes. I want to talk about Levi Aaron, who was indicted on Wednesday, charges of murder for the killing of 8-year-old Libby Kletsky, and I don't know if I have that correct. Denny, this is in your neck of the woods. Let me get Jan to tell the story.
Well, apparently they said that the little boy was walking home from a religious day camp, and he apparently got lost, and he stopped this guy, Levi Aaron, or whatever his name is, and asked him for help. And this was the first time the little boy had been allowed to walk home by himself, but he didn't make it home, unfortunately. They said about 33 hours later that the detectives found his severed feet wrapped in plastic, and in Aaron's freezer, they found a cutting board and 3 bloody carving knives inside the refrigerator. It's kind of sick. It really is kind of sick. It's hard to say, but talk about it. But they said the rest of his body was found in bags inside a suitcase in a trash bin, and his legs had been cut away from his torso even. And It's really heartbreaking because, I mean, this little boy, how can a little boy possibly hurt somebody? It hurts me to talk about it. I mean, it just reminds me of the Zenaida Gonzalez, not Zenaida Gonzalez. I can't even think right now.
Jan, one of the problems when I read it, and I read a few articles, is, first of all, he claims he hears voices. So here's another guy that probably shouldn't be on the streets. If he's hearing voices, anybody hears voices is automatically a danger. There's no one in this world that I've ever seen as a lawyer that hears strange voices from other sources that isn't ultimately a danger to his community. And yet they did nothing. And I find this interesting because I don't know, I'm not around the Hasidic community at all, except for my clients in the Diamond Mart throughout the years. But it's really a very low crime area. For this type of crime to happen in any cloistered Jewish society is so rare, it's actually shocking to me. And so I suspect this guy's not too tightly wrapped, and in the end, you're going to see he may not be mentally stable enough to stand trial. So don't be surprised about that.
Okay. I know we're about to lose our live listeners, and I do want to wrap this program up. Clearly, that last segment has upset Jen.
Sorry.
She's just weeping away. I want to thank everyone for taking part today, and I want to thank our listeners. Listeners, it's not the big ticket stories that are the stories that you should be following. It's the stories that no one's ever heard of. It's the injustice that has gone awry. I don't know how to fix it. Don't know if it can be fixed. Don't know if it should be fixed. I want to go around the table and get everyone's final thoughts. I'm going to start with you, Denny, because you're the thinker.
Well, Simon, the last couple of cases, the last few here, we've talked about Lawler and King and the young boy in New York City. Bring a lot of things to mind. One is that there are certain people in society that should be dealt with, especially when their problems are recognized and people are aware of them. And there's got to be somewhere where these people can be helped or taken off the streets, because eventually they're going to hurt somebody. And when you see these cases and hear about them, where people knew there were problems, knew there were issues, nothing's done, whether it's because there just aren't the facilities or the system broke down, whatever. But we're going to be talking about these cases like these in the future, unless something can be done somehow to deal with people who have these mental issues or problems before they harm someone, instead of talking about it afterwards. And they are some very, very sad cases. It's just a rotten shame that that's what's going on.
Dave, I'd like to get your final thoughts. Again, I know you know almost nothing about the last couple of cases, but yeah, it's so bloody depressing.
Yeah, Simon, it is. But I mean, I know things about the cases. I mean, they're in the news, no one can really be oblivious to it if they follow the news. But I look at what I've learned on the Casey Anthony case the whole time that I was writing about it and following it and seeing her in the courtroom. You have to separate the emotional aspect from when you write. You have to try and do your best to not be so emotional about it, because if you are, you let it take control of your life, I guess, too much. I think you just have to really try, and as hard as it is, you kind of put up a wall of some kind, or it'll really tear you into pieces. And that's what you see every day, this kind of stuff going on. And it's not so much that there's probably that much more crime. It's that there's that much more communication going on in the world. We can hear something 5 minutes after it happened in Spain. So, I think that we're just being slammed by all this kind of depressing news. That's all.
I think it sucks.
It does.
Manny, your parting thoughts. I'm sure you have some words of wisdom for us.
Well, I think, first of all, when it comes to Jan, somebody has to cry for these children. Somebody has to feel the way you do, and I really salute you for it, because it's your passion, to me, that drives this show, your belief in the importance of these children and that they should be honored and taken care of. And I think it's a very, very important aspect of our country right now, is that people start to care like Jan, and that we're not too apathetic. Dave has to be. He's writing and making a living at it, and he's facing this every day. It's a different situation. And there's room for lots of different emotions, except for apathy. And if we become numb to this, it'll just occur more, and we won't do anything about it. And what we need to do is accept this is not a phenomena in our society. It is a symptom of the deterioration of the fabric of our society, and one that we really have to look at and think about what we're going to do about it to change our country into being a more passionate, caring country that acts more to protect its children and acts more to protect every kind of citizen, particularly wives. One of my areas of deep concern in this world are evidenced by the story from Cobra, is that we need to protect women in this country as much as children who are unfairly exposed to violent and dangerous for ex-husbands. And on that thought, I'll pass the floor over to someone else.
Okay. Jan, do you want to say a couple of words?
All I want to say is that I just wish something could be done to protect these children more.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah, it would be.
Okay. I think now is a good time to wrap this up. I want to thank everyone for listening in. We'll be back next Sunday. Who knows? Next Sunday we might have a less contentious program. Till then, I want to thank all of our listeners. And I want to thank my panel. We'll be back.
Thank
Until
you.
Next time.
Thank
Goodbye.
You all for being
thank
here.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.